Coming up on episode 345 of Wheel Bearings, got the Polestar 2, the Kia EV9, Lincoln Nautilus, 2024 Jeep Wrangler, and Gladiator. Alex on Autos takes on the Fisker Ocean, 460 miles, and a Chevy Silverado EV RST. Tesla scraps its cheap EV, Ford delays its new EVs up to 2 years, and driving a Model T in the snow. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 345 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam of Lost Salmon of Guidehouse Insights.
And I'm Nicole Wakelin from The Road Reflected in Carbuzz.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International and a plethora of bands. I felt like I needed a second thing since you had second thing.
Which band played last night?
Last night it was the Modern Roadrunners, which is a loving tribute to Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers, which is a weird thing because Jonathan Richman lives in the Bay Area, so I have to constantly make sure he's not playing a show anywhere or near when we're playing a show, so we don't want
people to get confused.
Well, no, it's not the confusion. It's just I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like we really love, you know, him as a musician, and we don't, you know, we love him much. So much we're doing a band, but at the same time, we don't want to get in his way.
That's good. I mean,
he doesn't use the like technology though, so he'll never hear this unless someone plays it for him on a tape. Like they recorded it on a cassette tape.
So if anybody out there is a friend of Jonathan Richman's, you know, go ahead, feel free to transfer this show to a cassette tape.
Yeah.
And
play it for him.
Play it for him. Just this particular episode.
Just this one. I have a Walkman somewhere around here they could borrow.
Oh my God.
The tape kind.
And you've got a couple more shows coming up next weekend, right? In Salt Lake City?
I do. So if you live in the Salt Lake City area, we are playing two shows in that area. One at the I probably should have been prepared for this. Clearly, I am not.
Let's start now.
So we're playing a Talking Head show and an LCD Sound System show. So the Talking Head show is on Friday,
April 12th.
So on Friday, April 12th, head on down to the. Where is it? I'm gonna find the name of the place. I keep finding the old one. There we go. The Metro Music Hall in Salt Lake City. So Talking Heads, Metro Music Hall. It's a big Talking Heads night. Going to be playing a bunch. The DJs are going to be playing a bunch of new wave and indie 80s music so you can get your dance on. And then on Saturday night, we're playing an LCD Sound System set. And the DJs will be playing a bunch of, you know, 2000s indie dance punk stuff, and that will be at the Urban Lounge. So yeah, cruise on down if you live in the Salt Lake City area. I promise there will be dancing. We're very good at making people dance. That's it. That's my job, is to get people to dance.
All right.
Horrible at plugging, good at getting people to dance.
Okay. So now that we have delayed long enough, are you ready, Nicole?
I'm ready.
Okay. I can go first. No, I can go first.
Yeah. Yeah, you go, Robbie.
I'll be ready. I'm ready. Ding, you.
You are ready.
I am ready. I was having a computer problem. You guys, I turned on my laptop in typical Nicole fashion. My main screen, right side up, everyone looks fine. All my show notes and my surface upside down. Like, what? How does that even work? One pulls from the other. I don't understand the technological disconnect between
them. It's in the upside down.
The upside down. It's apparently, my laptop is in the upside down, and my actual monitor is here with us on planet Earth where it belongs. So I had the vehicle that I own. I had the 24 Jeep Wrangler plug-in hybrid in the high altitude trim. So the fun thing about driving this is that I have one. So when you want to see what's new really stands out because it's so you're like, oh, wait, I know this has changed. I know that has changed. So the big thing on this is that there is a much larger infotainment touchscreen. It now kind of it's two pieces. So you have your digital instrument cluster and then your instrument cluster. Is it even digital? It comes out a little bit and then it 12.3 inch screen, I think is what they have in there now. And it's this nice, long, vivid, bright screen. It's so much better than the old one. I mean, I got back into my husband's car. I'm like, wow, this is a tiny screen. So you really notice it. It makes a big difference.
You shouldn't have got it now. Now you're just going to think about that for years.
I know. Like, no,
how long's our lease?
He loves his little Wranglers so much. He's like, nothing will pry it from my hands. No, I'll drive it until it dies. So he loves what he has. He doesn't want to upgrade. In fact, we went to get bagels this morning. It's Sunday morning. We went to get bagels for breakfast, and I drove, and I heard a litany of reasons why this one is not as cool as his. He didn't. All the reasons why this one isn't cool. And the best part of that is, is he tells me this like, all right, this, this, and this. Like, I'm going to go to Jeep and be like, I'm sorry, my husband didn't like this. Would you redo the car? Thanks, bye. Like, what am I supposed to do about it?
Dear Stellantis.
Dear Stellantis.
According to my husband.
So what sort of things did Russ have to say about the new one?
What he doesn't like, he thinks the new screen, he's like, whatever. I don't need this new screen.
Not a screen person? Not a big screen guy?
I think he likes
it. Is it that it's bigger? Is there bigger and like higher?
It's a high. I think it's actually a higher resolution as well. It's better.
Okay. Oh yeah. That's yeah. Definitely.
For normal people, better in every way. For husband, so the new screen, it doesn't have a wide bezel around the edge. I guess you say, you know, is it really?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's very, very thick and burly on the older version with the screen that's really small. This one doesn't have that. So it truly looks more sleek and more floaty and more modern. Russ like, man, oh yeah, it's fleece sleek, modern garbage. Blah. So he didn't like that. He also
real Jeep owners don't do sleek.
Exactly. But he is
it needs burly and needs that extra protection from like the rocks.
The rocks that come flying in when you're off-road. The thing he most dislikes, hates, he got out of the car and was pointing, telling me this is what I don't like, was the grill. So the grill on the 24 is first of all a little bit. The slats are a little bit shorter than they were on the prior generation. And as I understand it, they actually vent. They do better for airflow than the prior ones to help cool the engine. But also by being a little bit shorter, when you put a worn winch, which you can now get a factory worn winch, you could always put one on, but now you can get it like right from them this way, that the winch doesn't cover up the bottom of the little grill. So you don't lose the bottom of your slats, that your little 7-slot grill that way. So by moving them shorter, he doesn't care. They should be longer. Okay. And they also changed. This is genuine, real customer feedback.
You would think a real Jeep owner would want anything that could help to make it better to put a winch on.
You would think, but I think he just wants it to be like it was and smack a winch on there. He doesn't want to mess with the grill. And then it depends a little on the trim. So I have a high altitude. It's entirely black. The grill itself and the surrounds on each of the little slats, everything is black. So you don't see them stand out as much. I mean, quite clearly, you're still looking at a Jeep Wrangler. There's like no doubt what you're looking at. But, and I think on some trims now, there's like a body color part in there so it stands out, or chrome or something. But on the old one, you could always see they were outlined differently, so you could see each little slot, whatever. Yeah. So now they're not that. Thing. So this is a horrible insult to my husband's very existence that we have messed with the grill. He is displeased, people.
There is anger.
The anger this morning as we went for his bagel. It's like, you are hangry. Let's get you that bagel.
Have you given him Ralph Shields' phone number so he can call?
I'm going to do that after the show and have him call directly and have the entire vehicle front end reworked just to make Russ happy. So he didn't like this. And you know, it was funny though that this just like, you don't realize just how much a lift matters. But we have the Rubicon, which is a little higher. This is the high altitude, which is a little lower. Can I just tell you? Yeah. I went to step into this and I overshot every time. I'm like, whoops. We don't think that it makes that much of a difference. You're like, okay, it's a little bit higher. When you were used to a certain ride height, that makes a big difference.
Muscle memory is a big thing.
And my brain is like, you're getting into a Wrangler, step up. And then it's like, whoa, not that much. But I like this.
But shouldn't it really be called the low altitude then?
I guess it should be low altitude. The low altitude. Hey yo. So this is in almost every other way, it's just like driving the same thing. It's a little quieter. They change one of the big changes, and here's a fun fact if you own a Wrangler. So I don't know if I said this in the show last time, but in the 24s, they put airbags into like side airbags. So they're sort of mounted in that piece that stays around you when you remove the top.
The sport bar,
is that what they technically call it? So if you
it's not a roll cage.
It's not a roll cage. What do they call it? Sport bar. So if you have an older version and you try to put just even same generation, just prior model year, it's shaped slightly differently. So some of what you have, if you have accessories like the bikini top things and little stuff that you can put up there, they might not work on the new one because it's slightly different shape. So you can't necessarily transfer over all your roof related accessories from early in this generation to later in this generation in the future. I don't know how many people will actually have it as an issue, but if you're looking to buy something for your brand new one and you're looking at something that was made for the 23 model year, wah, wah, might not fit.
But you know what?
That's
Jeep Performance Parts has you covered. Exactly. So you can buy all that stuff again.
JGP is there for you to give you all your performance. It's all a plot.
It's just like, you know, when you get a new iPhone every year, you know, you can't be reusing that case. You want a brand new case.
We need to make it different in some ways. You have to buy a new case. So that's the case with this. You'd have to buy. Now, presumably people ditch their iPhones a little more quickly than they ditch their cars, but just a thing, if you're looking at buying something as an accessory and it's from those older, it's just a prior model year, 23, it may or may not fit depending on what it is. So buyer beware. But it pretty much is just like driving Russ's. There is a difference. You know, it's a little smoother because it's not quite, doesn't have that lift. It's not the Rubicon. The Rubicon's a little bit rougher on the highway. They did say, although I didn't notice a difference, I made a phone call to one of my friends to test it out, but they say that it's supposed to be a little, the speakers are redesigned in such a way it should be a little bit better to hear people on the, when you call people, because the Wrangler's a noisy vehicle and it can be hard to hear someone. I didn't notice a marked difference. And neither did the person on the other end of the phone. I didn't think the people coming through sounded any better as far as where speaker placement was. And as far as mic placement, they didn't think I sounded any clearer than I did when I drive Russ's car. So if it is a difference, it's a really modest difference. Yeah, it's not something that's going to be dramatically noticeable. I think that, you know, the biggest thing is the grill looks a little bit different, and you do really notice that large screen on the inside makes it look, it doesn't make it look like, it just makes it look more modern. It's funny how much screen size impacts how old a car looks, because otherwise it's pretty much the same thing inside, right? Not a lot has changed, but you look at his with the older screen that's small, and you look at this one with the newer screen that's big, and it looks much more modern and of the future than the older screen. So that screen size is a pretty big design feature in terms of your first impressions, and it makes a much better one in this. And they'd added some things to this too. There's they have had off-road pages, but they now work with an app that's name has escaped me. They work with I think it's Trails Off-Road app. I didn't write the name down because I knew it and now I just forgot it. But it's actually an app that's kind of cool because it lets you could use it on your phone. Like if you don't have a Jeep and you just want to be able to have the information, but it tells you information about the trails. And now with the Jeep, it tells you which ones are Jeep Badge of Honor trails where you can go and you can mail away for a little badge, right? You have to check in, I think, once on the trail to prove that you were there. You have to like drop a pin or something. And then it knows you were there. And then you can be like, hey Jeep, I want my Badge of Honor. And you get this letter that says, hey, here's your Badge of Honor. Thanks. So it tells you those, but it also like rates out the trails from 1 to 10. So you know whether it's an easy trail or a hard trail. And then the neat thing is that people can update this app. It's not an OEM app. It's an actual app. So if you drive the trail and where there was supposed to be just a small group of rocks, there's been rain and now boulders in the way. You can be like, hey, heads up on April 5th. Giant, huge rock you're going to have to crawl over. You can still get by it, but if your skill level isn't there, this is harder than it was 2 weeks ago. So you can get sort of updated information. People can even upload pictures so you could potentially see like, oh yeah, that is a heck of a rock. I can manage it. Or nope, that's beyond my skill set to get through there now. So it gives you a little extra information about how to off-road.
Doesn't it also let you like leave breadcrumbs so that if you go off, you know, a marked trail? Yes,
it does let you leave breadcrumbs so that you can see where you've been. You can make like a little path. Yes, so that is a feature as well. I don't know if that's part of the official app or if that's more like the Jeep off-road pages. Some things are, they're two sort of separate.
I think it's part of the Trails Off Road. All right. So, anything else on the 2024 Wrangler?
No, 4xe? Nothing else on that. That is it.
All right, Robbie, what about
you? So I've been gone for a while with stuff and things, and during that time, I've driven a few vehicles. One of them was the Kia EV9. Which I really don't feel like at this point, like I even have to say anything. It just keeps winning awards. It won the, you know, and you know, World Car of the Year. It's like its 8th award, 12th award. I don't know. It doesn't really matter.
It's won like any award for which a car is eligible. It's like, oh, there's an award in the class. Just stop the voting and give it to the EV9. That's who's going to win.
Yeah. There was one award where it didn't win, and I heard some insider information on why it didn't win, and it wasn't because of the car. It was like some weird technicality type of thing. I don't think I'm allowed to share that publicly. Anyway, so I had the 2024 Kia EV9, their three-row electric SUV. Because this is what they hand out, they gave me the GT Alt-Line all-wheel drive. So it's the, I guess, the faster one, the nicer one. It's got all the bells and whistles and whatnot, and, you know, second row adjustable seats and whatever. Get the light, long-range rear-wheel drive that starts at $59,000. That's what I'm going to tell you right now. Unless you absolutely, positively need all-wheel drive, then you just get the wind. Because this one starts at $73,900, the GTE.
Yeah.
But the light rear-wheel drive starts at $54,000, so $55,000 versus $74,000. So it's a huge jump. So the GT line, it also doesn't have as much range as the other ones. The only one it has 270 miles, which is more than enough. I drove the Tahoe and back. I stopped at Tesla on the way there. I stopped at Electrify America on the way back. The only issues, it turns out, is a Hyundai issue with software where Hyundai Motor Group vehicles at super dock stations only charge it up to 90 kilowatts. So I just had to sit there a little bit longer. It was fine. On the way back, Electrify America, 170, easy peasy. I made friends, which is something I end up always doing at these things, at the charging stations, because they always like, hey, how do you think of your car? And I have to explain who I am. It's a big, comfortable car. I do wish it had, you know, for $73,000, it had all-wheel steering. Because it is big. It is, you know, there's a lot.
It's a long wheelbase.
It's a long wheelbase. I've gotten so accustomed to, you know, nice, you know, luxury cars this size. And it feels, you know, it's Kia Hyundai. They do a really good job of tricking you into thinking you're driving a luxury vehicle. It feels like a luxury vehicle. So when I turn and it doesn't have that turning radius that, say, another large vehicle like a Mercedes with all-wheel steering has, you're like, wait, hold on. Now I got to back up again. you end up sort of like, oh, I got a big vehicle, but I can still do these things. Like, no, you can't. It's still, yeah, you don't have that giant turning radius. I drove it up to the mountains. Unfortunately, it wasn't cold enough. It was snowing, but it wasn't sticking. So boo, I didn't get to test that out. It had all seasons on it. It's comfortable. It's easy to, you know, the infotainment system's easy to get to. It's easy to use. It's pretty efficient for what it is. At one point going down the mountain, I got it to over 1,000 miles per kilowatt hour.
Whoa.
Because you pull out, you know, you're in the mountain and you're just, boom, you're just going downhill the whole time. So it's like, essentially, so I just lift my foot and it's just going, and I just kept adjusting the regenerative braking, and I kept watching it go up and up and up and up and up and up. It's like, boom, 1,000 miles.
It's like when you're driving a hybrid, you know, in electric mode, and you see the MPG go, you know, 50, 60, 70, 999.
Yeah. So I hit 999, and then if you're really old like me and you played like Atari games, one of the things you wanted to do was flip the game, which is you got to 999 points and it went back to zero because there was no ending to a lot of those games. So we just call it flipping. So I flipped the game. So it just went to zero. It like, I don't know.
Like whatever.
The car just gave up. I give up. Actually, I got like 2.6 miles per kilowatt hour. With, you know, in a big, large vehicle like this, that's pretty good.
Well, especially driving up the mountains, you know, and you're probably hauling all the gear for the band and everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, this was for snowboarding.
Okay.
This was just snowboarding.
Working. He was out there having fun.
it's super comfortable. It's really roomy. I wish that you get a bench seat in the back, because when you fold down the second row, it's captain's chairs, which is great. You're like, oh, cool. You can use nice chairs. Those are always much more comfortable.
Well, you can get a bench in the other trims, yeah, just not in the GT.
Oh, I thought they couldn't get the bench.
It was trim specific.
Yeah, I think
I'll Google as we talk. I'll make sure.
All right. Okay. Google for me, please. Yeah, I think that at one point there wasn't a one. I don't know. Maybe they – whatever. Anywho, if you – yeah, with the problem with that with the captain's chair is when you fold them down, you got a big old gap in the middle. Uh-huh. So when you put things in the back, they could fall into the little gap and stuff. So, and if you have animals and you know.
Yes, I am, by the way, seeing that it seats 6 to 7 people. So the 2-7 people would indicate a bench seat in that third row.
A bench seat. Yep. Ah, okay. So it must be some. Or someone sits on a lap. They're like, you know what? It's fine. Some people, exactly. They're happy with it, you know. They're happy with each other. I had the ocean blue color. All the other colors, it's like gray, black, gray, ice green, blue, gray, or silver, gray. So get the blue. It's really pretty. It's really nice.
They don't exactly have the color scheme of the Wrangler with its like crazy reds and yellows and pinks.
Yeah.
No, unfortunately not.
It's like these very like,
Why is it like, why can't we have more? I wish we could have more fun colors in cars. Like I don't need 18 different shades of blue. Or 35 different shades of silver. Like, how about we do some bright colors? Just one bright color.
Yeah, I know. So, but the blue is really pretty. And so, yeah, I really dug the blue. You know what I didn't do? I didn't do a range run because I was running around the entire time. But sure, 210 miles, whatever.
Sounds good.
Sure. Or 270 miles of range. But you know, if you get the long range, the light long range rear drive, 304 miles of range. The wind and the land, both of those, 280. The least expensive version, 230. But if you're fortunate enough to live in an area where the charging stations are working well, at least above 150. I mean, 230 should be more than adequate because I caught myself talking to these people and I looked over and I was at like 85%. I'm like, oh, I better go because it was just, it did charge quick enough. So it was, yeah, no, there's a reason why it keeps winning awards. I don't know what else I can say about it. That's going to make you not want it. I don't know. it's a great SUV. It's too big for me.
What reason would be too big? Would that be how you talk someone out of it?
Well, for me, it's too big. Yes. That's the thing. There's no reason. Even if I had a kid, I'm like, I don't need, why would I need all this extra room? They could still put them in the back of a Kona. There would be no problem with it. It's got doors in the back. I mean, yeah. So, but if you're jonesing for a third row and you need an EV, you can't go wrong with the EV9. So, yeah.
And most likely when the next award season rolls around, it'll be the EV9's cousin, the Hyundai Ioniq 7, that is getting all the awards. That one's supposed to be coming out this summer. So
yeah, so you're just going back and forth. I don't even know if they're holding their. They're going back and forth, giving each other. Here you go. Here you. It's your turn. It's your turn now.
No, what's ours now? Who gets it? Okay, back to you.
Yeah. Between Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis, you know, they're winning all the awards for EVs.
Well, I mean, there's a reason for that. You make good cars, you win awards.
They're doing a good job. They're doing a good job.
Yeah.
They absolutely are.
Did a good job. And then, let's see. I also drove something else, which I wasn't that excited about. And, Lincoln Nautilus.
Didn't like it?
I didn't. The screen doesn't make any sense. There's zero value in having the right side of that screen. The left side, all right.
This is the instrument cluster.
Your display is more in your eye line. The instrument cluster, like you can see your directions are all in your eye line. Fine. The time, your tire pressure, what music you're listening to, what's the other one? Your trip odometer.
The weather's on there. Yeah.
Yeah, on the right.
And the weather will tell you where you are.
Which is great.
So if you don't know what town you're in, just glance over the weather widget.
Because we didn't know where we were and we like are Googling and trying to get home. It's like 10 minutes later, hey, you know, it says it right there on the screen by the weather where the heck we are right now.
So I don't, I, I'm just gonna say it's clever for the sake of being clever. That's the right hand side of the screen. And the downside of it is that now they've moved the infotainment screen down, which is actually more difficult to use because now you gotta look further down to get to it because they don't want to block, you know, the giant screen that they put into the car. So now it's more difficult to do things in that screen. And by the way, almost everything is in that screen. So you're just like, oh my God, what is this? Why am I doing this? This is, I don't know, man.
But how did you like the vent controls?
Oh gosh, I just gave up. I'm just cold. You know, I give up. This guy, I'm just going to be cold or I'm going to be hot, whatever.
But we were told by the folks at Lincoln that, you know, once people set their vents, they never adjust them again.
I'm constantly adjusting the vents, especially because my wife has it one way and I have it another. So there's, if you're only one person, you touch them less often. But as soon as I get in the car,
as a driver, just in the car, I only drive the press cars. No one else does. I'm constantly.
I'm always moving them around. I'm like,
It's not like restaurants.
Like you get in the car and it's really hot, so you put all the vents towards you. And now the car's cooled down, but now your hand and your right arm are freezing, but the rest of the car is cool. So now you got to move the vents away from 100%. You in order to keep the ambient temperature the same. But you don't want your hand and your arm to freeze and break off.
Yes, I get that's exactly how I feel.
It's such a weird. I clever for the sake of being clever. The car.
No, not clever. It's just dumb.
Okay, it's dumb for the. I don't like it. I'm like looking over at it. I'm like, why? And you're driving. You're looking. I just keep seeing it. And I'm like, okay, fine. That's the thing that's over there. It's money that was spent. It's money that the owner has to spend in order to have. I don't know. I don't know.
But did you find it distracting at all?
A little bit, because I hated it so much.
But you can turn them off. So you can just have the screen off.
Yeah. Well, then the crazy thing is that the screen right in front of you is kind of like, it's like, here's your speed. And what else is there? Your speed. There's like nothing else there. And I'm like, how do I change this? I'm like, oh, I got to go into the infotainment screen, and I can't find things. And then half the things that you would use while you're driving, you can't use. And I'm like, okay, I understand that. But then you know what you can use while you're driving? You can change the things on the far right screen. The things you're not supposed to be annoyed by or distracted by, you can totally change those. But some of the things that are like that are relevant to the driver, you can't. No. No. So there you go. So that's the Lincoln Nautilus. Anyway, so it drives well. It's very comfortable. It was weird because sometimes it felt larger than it was, and then sometimes it felt smaller than it was. It was weird. It was such an odd experience because when I first got it, I'm like, this car feels bigger than it actually is, which is the complete opposite of what everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. If you're driving kind of slow, but if you kind of push it and you turn and you're like going through, and then it feels a little bit smaller, it handles pretty well, and you're like, what is happening in the chassis control with this vehicle? it feels larger and it also feels smaller. Fine, whatever you got to do, Lincoln. Overall, if you're looking for a Lincoln, you want something that's nice and comfortable. It starts at around 50. Let me see. Oh, here we go. Starts at 54,750 is the one I had. That's the starting price for the Reserve 3. I don't know why there's a 3. It's the Nautilus All-Wheel Drive Reserve 3, $54,750. I believe let me find the starting price for this. I believe it's 50. It is $50,415. For just the regular Lincoln, it was a hybrid when I was driving, but it says right here the combined is 24. Yeah, that's about right. I'm like, why am I driving a hybrid for 24 miles a gallon? Okay, fine.
Need a little more power.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, although it's also heavier, and it doesn't. I mean, I don't know about you, but we drove both the gas and the hybrid one, and the hybrid did not feel any more powerful. If anything, it actually felt a little more sluggish.
Yeah, it's such a weird. Sometimes you're like, oh, we're driving in electric mode. I'm like, okay, cool. So my gas, you know, my mileage should be pretty good. And I look it up, and you look over way over in the back 40 acres of your land, and you see like you're getting 24. You're like, what? You're getting 23.5. I'm like, well, that's not great at all. And so the version I drove had a equipment group 230A. That was $10,000. Okay. It was, and some other things. $68,150. So $70,000 for this vehicle is that's a hard sell for me. $50,000. You want a nice, you know, comfortable vehicle. $50,000. I'm like, all right, yeah, I could swing that. But it's hard, you know, to be up in the 70s or, you know, 68,000 when there's so many other things on the market for at that price point that just feel a little bit finished.
When I started, you know, after we drove it, you know, I thought, you know, it was a decent vehicle. But when I started looking at the pricing of it, you know, it is very expensive for what you're getting. And if you compare it to other midsize two-row crossovers, you know, premium brand crossovers, you can for that $65,000, $70,000, $75,000 for the black label, you can find a lot of comparable vehicles that are actually plug-in hybrids that'll get you anywhere from 33, 34 miles of electric range up to 48 with the BMW X5. You know, the Volvo XC60 plug-in hybrid is about, 34 miles, 33, 34 miles of electric range.
Yeah.
You know, for that kind of money, I would take the plug-in hybrid instead.
Yeah. There's a lot of weirdness with this vehicle. Like on one hand, you're like, okay, I kind of get it. I kind of like it. But on the other hand, I'm like, what was this decision? Where was this decision made? Why was this decision made? And how do you say, well, you get a hybrid and we're like, okay, cool. You get 23 miles per gallon. You're like, wait, what? No, that's not that exciting. That's not great at all.
Yeah.
So that's the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus all-wheel drive reserve 3. It had a 2.0 liter engine, CVT, fine. It wasn't great. It's a CVT. You know, even the best are still like, good enough.
Yeah. Smartphones have gotten way more expensive over the past decade, and all it takes is one impact on a hard floor to make you wish you had spent a few bucks to put a case on it. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone, and it only costs a few dollars a month. Nicole, Robbie, and I travel a lot for our work, and we spend a lot of time in hotels, coffee shops, airplanes, and of course, the Delta Sky Club. Connecting to the Wi-Fi in any public places with shared Wi-Fi puts your data at risk because bad actors could be intercepting what you send and using it to steal from you. It only takes some cheap hardware to intercept Wi-Fi data, and even a smart preteen can do it. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per victim selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops the bad guys by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN uses state-of-the-art encryption that would take a supercomputer up to a billion years to crack. I have ExpressVPN on all my devices, including a MacBook Pro, Windows laptops and desktops, and Android and iOS phones and laptops, or tablets. When I want to be secure, I just launch the app, click once to connect, and my data is secure. As I said, I travel a lot for my work, and I have to connect to countless public Wi-Fi networks in many countries. I have ExpressVPN on all my connected devices so that whoever else is on the same network can't see any of my data. That's important because I often have to check banks, credit card accounts, and transmit client data that might be sensitive, as well as filing articles on news that might be under embargo. ExpressVPN protects all of it, and I've been paying for my own account for years. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's ExpressVPN.com/wheelbearings, and you can get an extra 4 months for free. ExpressVPN.com/wheelbearings. Did you know you can support Wheelbearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, I have the Polestar 2 dual motor performance. So the latest, the 2024 version, which got a refresh last year. So what used to look kind of like a faux, almost Volvo-like grill, is replaced by just a body colored panel now that has the front camera in the middle of that. And then, there's also the radar sensor behind it and other stuff. So the single motor version, which used to be front wheel drive, is now rear wheel drive. So they have the motor at the back instead of at the front. And it got a slightly larger battery that pumped it up to 82 kilowatt hours from 78. So the single motor rear drive version will get up to 320 miles of range on a charge. But that's not what I had. I had the dual motor, which keeps the original 78 kilowatt hour battery. It got a larger rear motor now, and then also the front motor. And it has, it's rated by the EPA at 247 miles of range with the performance pack. And among other things, the performance pack gets you 20-inch wheels and tires, which are, you know, bigger, heavier, more rolling resistance. And then, of course, the car that I've got is also still rolling on winter tires, which also, you know, are a little more rolling resistance than the summer tires that you would normally have, or even all season tires. So my range was not quite as good. I didn't do a full blown range test, but over the week that I've been driving this thing, it's averaged about 2.7 miles per kilowatt hour, which is not great, but, you know, I've had worse as well. Especially
you got the performance and the winter tires. So,
yeah. So it's not bad.
Shoot yourself in the foot with that.
But that, you know, and also to be fair, I haven't exactly been hypermiling it. You know, I've been using the 455 horsepower.
I've been Polestar-ing it everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's got the performance pack, so I'm going to use the performance pack. And it's, you know, it'll go 0 to 60 in 4.1 seconds, and it's quick. I've always liked driving the Polestar 2. The only real complaint I've ever had about this car is just that the belt line is too high. So when you're sitting in it, you feel like you're sitting very low in it, or at least you feel like you're surrounded by bodywork. And if, you know, if you're somebody that likes to have that feeling of being ensconced in a car, okay, fine. You know, rear visibility kind of sucks, through, because, you know, it's a fastback, so you get, you know, fairly narrow rear window. This doesn't have a digital camera mirror, system. So rear visibility is not great. But I like the way this thing drives. You know, I like the way the suspension is set up, the handling dynamics. And now there's got a little more power on the rear axle. You know, when you're going around corners, you know, if you give it a little, you know, squeeze the right pedal a little bit harder, you can get the back end to come around a little bit. You know, so it feels a little more like a rear drive car, which is fun. Let's see what else. I've charged it at both the Electrify America station and at the Tesla superchargers near me that have magic docks. On the magic dock, I actually got it to charge it up to 126 kilowatts when I charged it from 26% state of charge, which, you know, it's the dual motor. Interesting enough, The dual motor has a maximum charge rate on DC of 155 kilowatts. The single motor with the larger battery will actually charge it up to 205 kilowatts. So I got 126 out of 155 on the supercharger, which is pretty good. And I managed to get, I think, 140 or so on the Electrify America charger. At least when I went there, and it wasn't full, all six chargers in use. This thing charges pretty decently. You've got the 12.3 inch center screen. One of the things they got rid of, I don't know for sure, but it feels like when I drove the Polestar 2 before the refresh, that it actually had a separate on off switch, a start button.
You just had to get in and out.
Okay. Right.
Well, I've literally driven it like once. So I was trying to remember.
Yeah. I couldn't remember. I thought it had one. I know the Volvos do, but I guess the Polestar didn't. So it's got Android automotive infotainment system. All that works fine. I log into my Google account, download some apps for Pocket Casts and other stuff. And you know, it's all good. In Google Maps in here, it will if you put in a destination that is beyond the current range of the car, it will give you suggestions as to where to stop along the way and how long to stop. So it'll show you on the list, okay, here's a couple of charging stations where you should stop. Here's what your estimated state of charge is going to be when you get there, and here's how long you should stay there to get the shortest trip time. So I put in, for example, going from Ann Arbor to Chicago, and I was about 60% state of charge at the time. So obviously I wouldn't make it all the way to Chicago, and it told me to stop in Kalamazoo at this EA station for about 10 minutes, and then I would be able to get all the way to Chicago. So that's handy to have. That's something, that other manufacturers, Google is building that into the version of Maps that's part of Android Automotive now. So they're using, vehicle information. So it's the same thing that GM's doing on their Ultium EVs, except that unlike GM, if you want to use CarPlay, you can still do that in the Polestar.
Dun, dun, dun. So I used a better route planner for my trip to Tahoe with the EV9, and even though it's when I selected EV9 and better route planner, it said beta. Mm-hmm. It was like within like a few, like a kilowatt or two of like how I was driving, like how fast, like the terrain and everything, like how many kilowatts my vehicle had. It was actually underestimated. So the car was doing a little bit better than what that app uses to tell you like where to go and what to do. And you can still tell it's built by engineers. But if you like, once you figure it out, you're like, this is great. So I'm happy that Rivian bought it. I hope that they continue to make it better for people who have EVs that don't.
Yeah. A little bit nicer interface in there would be not easier. Yeah. To use interface would be.
Yeah.
Nice.
But the Google Maps and Android Automotive it's great.
Yeah. And I used that the other day. I had to go to Southfield for a radio interview. And I used that because I needed to get charged while I was over there. And the range estimation was within 1% when I arrived at the charger in Google Maps. So it was good. So there's that. The Plus Pack and the Performance Pack give you all the options like Napa leather and a bunch of other stuff in there. So all in, the one that I drove with the 20-inch wheels and everything came to a grand total of $58,150. And like I say, I like this car. I like it a lot. It's very comfortable to drive. The seats are very comfortable, supportive. Still has, an instrument cluster in front of me where it belongs. You can reach out and move the vents with your hand. You don't have to touch any touchscreen.
I've driven the rear-wheel drive and the all-wheel drive version. I'm going to tell everyone, get the rear-wheel drive version.
Yeah.
It's so much funner to drive. Yes, it doesn't have as much power, but you get more range. It charges quicker. It
still has plenty of power.
Yeah, I mean, it still has plenty of power. We drove them in Colorado, in the mountains, And yeah, the rear wheel drive, that's the money car. It's less expensive. Like it's the perfect package. Again, if you absolutely positively need all wheel drive, then yes, sure, it's a great all wheel drive vehicle. But
or you could just get a set of winter tires.
Or you could just get a set of winter tires. Seriously, you just get to throw some Blizzaks on there. And then for like, you know, the half or however long your winters are, your range will probably go down, I don't know, maybe 30 miles.
Probably not still be, that much in most cases.
And it'll still be higher than the all-wheel drive version.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So buy the rear drive Polestar 2.
Yeah. Do
or battery at least. It. Oh, and another thing I like about this, because it's a hatchback, it's a liftback. You know, I had ordered a new composter from the county last week, and I had to go pick it up on Monday. And, you know, these composters are made from 55-gallon plastic barrels. So it's a good-sized barrel. Mm-hmm. And I folded down the back seat, you know, took out the cargo cover off, folded down the back seat, fit right in there. Lots of room in there.
Bam.
Yeah.
So much mulch.
Who needs a 9,000-pound electric pickup truck?
You don't. You don't need all that. You know, there's someone... Someone posted online they had like 8 things of like soil in the back of their Cybertruck. Yeah, like, I can do truck things. And of course, everyone immediately dogpiled on this person.
Well, I posted a picture I had when I had the Hyundai Santa Cruz with 16 bags of soil in the back of the Santa Cruz.
Yeah. I put 14 bags of like. Of like mulch in the back of the Kona.
Yeah.
And just like,
go Kona, go.
Yeah.
Fortunately, mulch is very light.
Yeah. Well, mulch doesn't weigh anything. So it wasn't that big of a deal. It just takes up space. It takes up a little bit of space. Yeah. It takes up space in my car and in my mind.
All right. Let's see. Back to Hyundai.
Hyundai.
So, Hyundai, when they showed off the IONIQ 5N at the LA Auto Show last November, I was talking to the head of the N Performance Group at Hyundai, and I, you know, because they during the presentation they'd been talking so much about, you know, how, you know, this thing be so much fun, you know, for track days, you know, because you get the simulated shifting and the noise and everything, and you know, so I asked him, you know, it's like, well, since you're making so much emphasis on how good this thing is on the track, any plans to do like a one make series, you know, cause you've got, you know, the, you know, Mazda MX-5 Cup and, you know, the Mustang Challenge series and, you know, the Porsche Carrera Cup and all these other one make series, why not do something, you know, because there's no existing classes where an electric car could fit. And he said, stay tuned. Well,
dun, dun.
This week they announced the IONIQ 5N EN1 Cup car, which is a track only version of the IONIQ 5. With, you know, it's basically essentially an electric TCR car. You know, so it's, you know, got a lot of the same kinds of things you find on a TCR race car. 650 horsepower, wing, body kit. Big brakes, roll cage, you know, all the safety equipment, slick tires, 18-inch forged wheels, bucket seat with a 6-point safety belt, all the good stuff that you want in your race car. And it weighs 1,970 kilos, which is about 4,300 pounds, roughly, which is fairly heavy for a race car, but, you know, it's quite a bit lighter than a stock IONIQ 5N. What do you think? You going to get one of these and go racing?
So I watched the video. Tim Stevens went over to Korea to drive it, and there's a video of him driving on Engadget.com. And I was watching it and I was like, man, this thing's dope. But I don't have $100,000. So, which apparently, according to Tim Stevens, is a deal. He races cars. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah, I mean, $100,000 is actually fairly cheap for this type of race car.
Like, it seems expensive. Yeah, so it's a lot of money, but you're definitely getting a lot for that $100,000 with this thing.
Yeah, You can get this or a Silverado.
Yeah. Well, you know, as they say, the quickest way to make a small fortune in racing is to start with a large fortune.
Yeah. It's like people are like, oh, do you make money in your band? I'm like, no. Last night we made $8. Woo-hoo! Like the whole band. $8. That's
how many of them are you? How much did you walk away with? Did you get a full dollar each?
No, we each get $2.
Ooh. So,
yeah. Robbie's buying the next
made out like bandits.
Sometimes you're like, oh, we made $2,500, or we'll play a wedding and we'll get like $3,500 or $4,000 or whatever for a wedding, or more if we have to go like really far away. But it still doesn't pay for like, oh, I bought a two, you know, some of the guitars would be like, I bought a $1,500 guitar because of this song, because of a song, or, you know, we have to pay rent, or like, it's just, it, like, no one's thinking about making money on this. It's just like, this is the thing I like to do. Wee. And sometimes I get a little bit of money to offset my insane hobby. That's where motor racing
is. It's kind of like doing a podcast.
Yeah. Are we making a lot of money on this? No. Do we get to hang out and say things? Yes. I'm going to apologize right now. I was invited to the Ioniq 5 and Drive this week.
So was I.
And guess where the email went? Yeah. Into my spam, because they send it to my Apple Mail, and my Apple Mail is trash. I'm like, please send it to Gmail. And so I emailed them back because I got to save the date, and we're like, hey, you guys never replied to – you guys never sent me the actual invite. And then like a few days later – and I was waiting, and there was another event that I'm like, oh, well, you know what? I'll do this other event. It's good for work. I can use it for video. And then I got the email back. They're like, no, man, we sent it to you. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. Looking through spam. Oh, man.
There it is.
Anyway, so I'll talk to you guys about the Sapphire is what so it's don't feel bad for me. But at the same time, at least the Ioniq 5 and I could maybe afford.
Yeah,
the Sapphire less so.
Yeah, I mean that the 5 and Drive is going to be at Laguna Seca, and unfortunately, I had to decline because I already had the prior commitment this week.
I know. I'm like, oh, the corkscrew with that.
Yeah.
Because you're just like Anyway. Yeah. So that lift when you go first down, you know, the body weight lift. I want to see how that works with the EV.
Well, I'm gonna be on vacation, so I'm not driving anything on the show. So you guys have fun driving stuff. I'm just going on vacation. Bye.
Ding 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 ding. Okay.
All right. Okay. Enough on the Ioniq 5 and EN1 Cup car. Nicole, mm-hmm. Last week we touched on the 2024 Jeep Gladiator.
We did.
Because you were in the video with Roman.
Which I still haven't watched, but I do know what you're talking about. I'm like, when did they video me? I'm like, oh, yeah.
So now the embargo has lifted. So yes. Tell us about the new Gladiator.
So it's funny because I just have a 24 Wrangler this week. The same kind of stuff that they did with the 24 Wrangler, the same updates. Now they just kind of have rolled those out so that they're also in the Gladiator. So the grill is slightly changed. You get the bigger
screen. Oh, no, don't let Rush know about the grill.
I know. He's really pissed off. I'm not even going to tell him.
Like, I haven't even told him.
I haven't told him. They did it to the other one. It's similar changes, and they also roll out the new trim levels. There's that Mojave X and the Rubicon X, which get a little bit nicer inside, a little bit fancier. So what they let us do is they took us out, because we were in Moab for Easter Jeep Safari, they had us drive the Gladiator Mojave out in the dunes. And not in the dunes, but in the dirt. There's not only dunes, but dirt. And Nina Barlow was leading our group, who is this amazing off-roader. She has a couple places where it's like a Barlow Rentals or something. Anyway, you can get cars there's in Moab and in Sedona. And she teaches people how to off-road. She can teach you how to off-road, whether you're like, I've never done it in my whole life ever before, ever. Or I'm an expert. And Nina's the one that'll go, you think. And she will have you do stuff that you don't.
Yeah.
Right. So she was actually leading our group in hers, which is hilarious. She's like, I'm going to go a little bit faster. We're like, where'd she go? She's just flying along. Because she's so fast and so confident. But she's laughing as she's talking on the walkie. You know, hey, can I get carried away? Here I am. But the fun thing driving behind her is that, you know, you're like, well, I know the car can do it. Because she has done it. I don't know if I can do it fast. It's not the car's ability or the truck's ability in this case. It's my ability. But the thing is, when you're going over whoops in the desert, they hurt if you're in a car that isn't designed to do that. You can come down really hard when you're just over and over to bump, bada, bump, bada, bump. It's like moguls, I think, skiing is what it makes me think of. And really, really harsh in a vehicle. And you have to slow down, which takes some of the fun out of it. This, you don't really have to slow down as much as you think. Like we were moving. We were really going. And I remember the person I was driving with, he sort of hit one that was a little bit higher. And we both had like, oh, and then came down. It's like, oh, wait. That was okay. Right. He's like, I don't have to lift off the gas.
Hold on. You're bracing. Really, you're bracing for that. Oh, no.
No, it's like, no, that
wasn't. We have to get on the radio. We're like, hey, everyone. Yeah. So,
well, I had some troubles. it was really unbelievably smooth. And I think that's, you know, the Mojave is the trim that's designed. It has special shocks. It has special suspension. It's all these things underneath it that are designed to make it not just so you can go off road, but so that you can drive fast over things like little whoops in the dirt, and that you can take it, hence the name Mojave, out in the desert and drive very fast over, you know, desert terrain and not have to worry about destroying your car, about things overheating, all the kind of stuff that you want. That's what this one has done. I don't get a chance to drive that way on the East Coast because we don't have that kind of terrain. We've got trees, we've got forest. We don't have that kind of open desert or open areas where you can drive like that, but you can in Moab and you can, you know, in places in the West Coast and the Northwest. If you're in like, you know, Nevada, those places. So it's kind of neat to get a chance to do that. And it was just so confidence inspiring. Both myself and my drive partner said the same thing. It's like, gosh, you really don't think you can drive as fast as you can drive, that you can drive as aggressively as you can. You assume it's going to hurt. You assume you're going to feel it. Mm-hmm. And you really don't. Like it is so well done. It is very, I feel like it's very Jeep in that way. You know, it's going to let you drive this as hard as you want to drive it. And the limitation is really going to be what's your skill level? How comfortable are you driving that fast over that kind of terrain? What do you want to try and do with it? Because this is really, in this trim, this is a hardcore off-roader. That's basically what this is. And if, you know, you don't have to be a hardcore off-roader. You don't have to be. I mean, you don't have to. Half the people who drive these really crazy off-road vehicles, whether it's a, you know, a Jeep or a Land Rover or whatever, don't really do all the things that you could do, but just knowing that you could do it if you wanted to, you know, and that's kind of what this lets you do.
Most go to the grocery store, go to work.
Yeah.
Right. You're not, most people aren't doing what sometimes you could do in these. And it's right. You have a little curb you want to go over. Not a problem. You can car ride over that curb. So, you know, and I like the things that it got, the same kind of features, like the infotainment got the exact same updates as the Wrangler 4xe that's sitting in my driveway right now. And they are great. They even had the drive route that we drove off road in this. They had that one programmed in there. So you could kind of see the route we were on, which was really neat. I think Wranglers and the Gladiator, which really the Gladiator is a Wrangler with a bed on the back. It's, you know, in very many ways, it's very similar aesthetic, similar looks, similar feel. If you're buying that vehicle, you're buying it for one of two reasons. You really love Jeeps and you love that Jeep thing and you love having that 7-slot grill squished or not on the front of the vehicle and you love the whole community and the vibe of owning that car, or you really want to do some off-roading. And if you do, depending on which trim you get too, you can go really hardcore with this. And I think the updates they made for this one, there's not like significant updates. It's like a little refresh, but it still moves the vehicle forward. And I think the biggest way it moves it forward is genuinely the infotainment not looking as old and dated as it was before.
And you can take the doors off.
You can take the doors off. You can take the roof off. You can drop the windshield. Woohoo!
All the fun
things. All the fun things that you want to do.
Your parents told you not
yes.
to do.
I still, when I drive off road, and I know what it sounds like when skid plates hit rocks, like skid plates are there so that when you hit the rocks, you hit the skid plate instead of hitting the very sensitive components of your vehicle that are underneath. Every time you hear that, like,
instead of having a sharp rock go through your gas tank,
smacks
oil right? pan.
And it's what they literally are supposed to do. And it's a giant metal plate. So it scratches along the rock with all the horrific noise of a giant metal plate. And everything inside me just is like, oh no, I'm in so much trouble. I'm so much, nope, it's okay. Like it's still like that. Okay. Like teenage Nicole's like, oh, my dad's going to kill me when I get home. Every single time when I hear that, it makes me uneasy.
I'm just going to tell you, you can also get in a manual transmission.
Yes.
So, yeah.
That is a good point. It's one of the few trucks of this type, well, really kind of the only really hardcore off-road one that you can get with a manual.
Yeah. So I'm just saying.
Did Tacoma get rid of it?
I like the Gladiator a lot for reasons that.
Tacoma has a manual, but it's only on like the SR5, like on the base trims.
Like cruise around town, pick up mulch, trim.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, gotcha. Yeah. No, I like the Gladiator a lot. For reasons that defy any sort of logic. I wouldn't buy one because there's literally no reason for me to have a Gladiator.
It's too much of a truck.
It's too off-road. I feel like I need to move. If I buy the truck, I need to move. I have to move to Alaska or Wyoming or, you know, actually literally like 50 miles from where I live right now. I don't even have to move to another state where, you know, everything is off-road.
The only real complaint I had about when I drove the Gladiator Mojave when it first came out a couple of years ago was it just seemed like it was maybe a little underpowered given the weight of this thing, because it's not a lightweight truck. The only engine in there available is the Pentastar V6, which is a great engine, but you know, 280 horsepower is maybe kind of marginal for this thing. Mm-hmm.
And they got rid of the diesel.
And at the time, I think I wrote, you can't get the diesel anymore. Hopefully at some point, you know, they'll bring out, they are going to bring out a plug-in hybrid version. So they're going to have the 4xe.
They did. A little while ago now, they showed the 4xe, but I don't think we know when. I don't remember them saying anything about an EV.
I think it's going to be like later in 2025.
Yeah.
Oh, they need to get that thing out ASAP.
Yeah.
Because plug-in hybrids are a thing.
I know.
We've been telling you.
The other option would be to put in the Hurricane 6-cylinder.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. I guess it could.
Possible.
They probably have some more laying around.
Yeah.
They got to get rid of them somehow.
Yeah.
We're all looking around. Where do we got? Oh, we got some more of those
hurricane in there. Why don't we do that? Sure, why not?
All right. I mean, they're just sitting there. What are we supposed to do with them?
Okay. Moving on. One thing about Fisker this week, you know, still don't recommend that you buy one even at $25,000. But our friend Alex Dykes at Auto Buyer's Guide, because there were none available from a press fleet, he actually went on Turo and rented one.
That's very Alex. Which, come up with a solution that way.
Yeah, which was pretty interesting. He did a really good video. And, you know, a lot of the same complaints that we've heard, you know, elsewhere. You know, looks good, but, you know, it's got a lot of challenges with software and you know, some other components. But one thing that I took note of in watching his video, the Fisker Ocean also has vents you have to control through the touchscreen. And when, because this car has been on Turo and people renting it that are not familiar with it, apparently some previous renter had tried to manually move the vents.
Oh, no.
And move them. And so the vents on the passenger side were actually broken because somebody tried to manually move them. So they were uncontrollable.
Oh, geez. That's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and there was also problems with the 12 volt battery in this one. And this is not that uncommon with some EVs, you know. They still use a 12 volt battery to run a lot of the low voltage stuff. And sometimes the battery dies on you just as it does in a gas powered car. But a lot of the memory for stuff is maintained by power from the 12 volt battery. And when the 12 volt battery is replaced in the Ocean, it loses track of a lot of things that have to be calibrated. So things like the radar sensors and a whole bunch of other stuff that simply because it had not got, they had just replaced the 12 volt battery, but it had not been completely recalibrated because there's no service center around to do the work. a whole bunch of stuff just simply did not work on this car, because it hadn't been recalibrated yet. So another thing to watch out for if you're thinking about buying a Fisker Ocean.
Jeez. I keep waiting for it just to be our news of the week to be that it's no longer here, Fisker, at all.
Yeah.
Listen, if you can get one for super, 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 super cheap, Those batteries are great for a resto mod. I'm just saying. That's all.
that's actually not a bad
idea.
That's
probably the best use case for that car at this point.
I'm just throwing that out there for y'all. If you are thinking, you're like, you know, I have a, you know, a Dodge Aspen station wagon from the 70s, and I really want to make it into an EV, if you can get a Fisker Ocean for $5,000. Pull those batteries out. Guess what? Your Dodge Aspen is going to be
$5,000 more than the Dodge Aspen.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be cheaper than buying the batteries.
Assuming you can find a 1970s Dodge Aspen wagon that hasn't completely turned to iron oxide yet.
That's true. We had one in the 80s and 90s, and it was something. Yeah. I drove that thing a lot. It was green, and it was green on the outside. It was green on the inside.
We had a 73 Dodge Dart Sport that was also green on the outside, green on the inside. And it wasn't that, I mean, the Aspen was based on the same platform. It had not actually changed very much when they went from, they basically just put new body on the old Dart platform to create the Aspen. So I think it still had the torsion bar springs and a bunch of other stuff. Although I think by the time they got to the Aspen, they did at least replace the front drum brakes with disc brakes. Because my dad's
it car did have, it did have disc brakes.
My dad's car had 4-wheel drum brakes. So
it was like, it was, you just had to call ahead. I'm going to be stopping now. I think I need to stop in the next block or two. So if we could all work together now. Let's plan it out.
All right. You have mentioned Robbie briefly a couple of times, and so have I. $100,000, 9,000-pound pickup trucks. So the Chevy Silverado EV RST first edition is official now, being announced almost 2 years ago.
Right,
it's finally supposedly coming this summer, and we have official pricing now. $96,450, which is $10,000 less than what they originally said it was going to be.
Hey, $10,000's $10,000.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot of money. That's like my first three cars put together.
It's a chunk of change. Well, it's also a different market than it was 2 years ago. Like when they were making that estimate 2 years ago, it's like, we think it's going to go on sale for this. It's like, oh, that's not going to work. Let's put it on sale for this instead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, after everybody else is struggling to sell electric pickup trucks, you know, $100,000 plus, I think they finally got the clue that, yeah, okay, we better drop the price.
It was a smart move to roll it out.
I don't know if it's enough, but
yeah, it's a tough market. The large working pickup truck people, I'm going to keep saying it, they don't want an EV. It's the people who are buying Rivians. It's the sport truck people and the small truck people. They're like, yeah, they're busting for EVs, but it's hard to tell somebody, hey, you know that Silverado you have? What if we made an EV a lot more expensive? And this is the best vehicle, the best EV for towing, from according to people who have tried it out. But also, you know, broom, broom, truck.
Yeah. I like that description.
So the RST, which is the first consumer version of the first retail version, this is the high end, and there's going to be other trims. There's going to be a Trail Boss and a couple of other trim levels coming later on. But the RST, you know, this one's got everything on it. So it's got 4-wheel steering, 24-inch wheels, you know, leather interior, all the stuff, including that massive battery, which means that it's rated at 440 miles of driving range for the RST. So the 4WT work truck gets 450. This one gets 10 miles less, mere 440, at least on the label. Zach from Jerry Rig Everything and a couple other guys took a couple of these for a road trip from Las Vegas to where did they go? New Mexico somewhere, I think. Anyway, they managed to go actually 460 miles on a charge in this thing, in the Silverado RST. So this thing's got some serious driving range. And last fall, when Roman and Andre got a 4WT, the work truck, to test from Chevy. They did a towing test, and they actually got 230 miles of range towing a trailer
with the
work truck. So, you know, this has got a lot of stuff in there, and it's not cheap, but actually at only $3,000 more than the F-150 Lightning Platinum, you actually get a lot more stuff that you don't get in the Platinum, like that extra range. You get a lot more range out of it. You know, it's got Super Cruise. It's got four wheel steering, which is, you know, big for something like, you know, something with this kind of wheelbase. You've got the mid gate on here, which you can't get on the Ford.
Digging the mid gate
and the multi-flex tailgate. So you can put stuff, you know, put in objects that are almost 11 feet long in this thing. So it's not cheap, but you're getting a lot more money. Yeah. Would I still
get more bang for your buck?
Would I still recommend, you know, would I recommend a 9,000 pound pickup truck? Probably not.
Very nice. If you're in the market, you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. That's really cool. I like it. It looks a little bit like a RoboCop in the front. So I really dig that. In Detroit, RoboCop. I don't know if people care about that. For the price, it's only a few thousand dollars more and you're getting all this extra stuff versus the F-150 Lightning. I mean, that's a good move for them. I think they really needed they really need to show, you know, the head to head. And I think a lot of people who've gotten it and done all these tests with the range and the towing, I think they're, it's really helping GM with this. But again, I think that, you know, it's a market I feel like maybe everyone should have waited a little bit on, where people who got like, okay, well, I have my big work truck, vroom, vroom, or my big truck, but I also have this other vehicle, and that's the vehicle they're going to get an EV first. And then eventually they'll go to the work truck. But that's just, you know, what do I know? I don't run a car company.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still think that, you know, there's a market for the work truck, you know, especially if you can offer it at the price point that Ford originally.
Yeah. The $40,000 work truck. That was a pretty
steep deal for the Lightning. Yeah. Cause, you know, at that price point, you know, $40,000, it was actually cheaper than a four wheel drive crew cab gas F-150.
Yep. It made a lot of sense for fleets too. It would have sold like gangbusters if it had stayed.
Yeah. And yeah, and now that same truck is $50,000. Yeah. And the cheapest Silverados, you know, or see the 4WT, I think is something like 76. And then the, I don't know what the price is for the 3WT, which has a slightly smaller battery and only goes about 380 miles. But
oh no.
It's only 380 miles.
Only 380 miles.
But it also has more payload because it's not hauling around as much battery.
Such a dub. Yeah. You also have that issue.
Yeah.
Where you keep adding battery, which means your payload goes down. And you're just like, oh no, how are we going to get there?
Yep. All right. Well, speaking of Ford, let's go to Ford next. They announced that they're delaying their next generation EVs, delaying the launch of them. we were supposed to see a pair of three-row electric crossovers, a Ford Explorer type vehicle, and something like the Lincoln Aviator. Around the end of this year, early 2025. Those vehicles are now not coming until 2027.
They're just giving the market to Hyundai, aren't they?
Yep.
Hyundai and Kia are just like, here you go. You can have it.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous because what happens is that you get people who are jumping to that brand and now they stick with that brand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be tough to get people back.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. I mean, I can understand why they're sort of slowing down, but I think it's, you know, it's a hard, you know, trying to figure out this whole transition to EVs is difficult. And some people have made decisions that they thought would work out and they didn't work out. And some people built, you know, systems that they thought would be great. And it turns out it needs a lot more work. And so, you know, you kind of have to step back and be like, okay, well, we need to pay people still. We need to make a lot of money for our shareholders and we got to pay our CEO a lot of money. So let's just go in with more plug-in hybrids.
Yeah. And then the Project T3 electric pickup that's going to be built in Tennessee at the new Blue Oval City plant in Tennessee. That one has been pushed back from 2025 until 2026. So we're not going to see any all new EVs from Ford for at least 2 more years, and in some cases 3 years, which, you know, that's not great for Ford.
Yeah. And it's crazy because everyone's like, you'll all of a sudden it'll be like, oh, the F-150 Lightning had its greatest month ever. Or, you know, the Mach-E had an amazing sales month. And you're just like, wait, what? I thought they weren't selling them. What's going on?
Well, they cut the price. And so now people are buying.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people are buying. You're like, oh, these make so much more sense now.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah. And then the sort of slowing down on a small, and I know the profit margins on an inexpensive EV are going to be slim, but at the same time, you're going to sell a lot of them. If you can, whoever can get to market with a nice, inexpensive EV is going to do really well.
Yeah.
Because they're going to, and everyone who's sort of like, well, I don't know, you're going to start and stopping.
Well, GM sold a ton of Bolts last year.
63,000 Bolts.
Yeah.
That's the best
year ever.
And then they cancel. That's a great. And then people are like, oh, no, people don't want. I'm like, I think they do. It was the best selling EV that wasn't a Tesla.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of people, they thought, well, this will work. And then it didn't work. And I think, you know, Hyundai, I don't want to say they're smarter than other companies, but I think they're what they...
They've done a lot of things a lot smarter than a lot of other people.
Yeah, let's just say they are. When I talk to them, they're all like, I'm like, how are you as an automaker or as a group? Like, you guys seem to be killing it in EVs. Like, you're not like stopping. You're not like sort of like, oh, wait, hold on. You're not... Or like, and what I've heard back is like, because when we decide something from the top down, everyone is part of the decision. That's what we're doing. There is no like, oh, there's not this division over here who's saying, oh, well, you know, we still want to sell these. And they're like, no, everyone is like, we're all in, you know. And of course, within any company, there's going to be people who are like, oh, I don't know about that. But as a whole, they're like, this is what we're doing. And I asked them, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, a year ago, I'm like, you know, people aren't making money on EVs. They're like, we're making money on our EVs. Like, wait, I don't know what these other people are doing, but we're making money on we make profit on our cars. And then an article just came out and they're like, yeah, we're still making profit on our cars. And we're just like,
although, you know, Hyundai claims that they're making profit on their cars, but I've also heard, from some other sources that they're losing thousands of dollars on every EV. So,
well, if you count in R&D and the changeover, and you have to build factories, you have to do, I mean, it's, that's it's, everyone has to do yeah, that. It's, I mean, it's, look, it's, if you just look at Tesla for the last 10, 15 years, there was no way they were going to be profitable out the gate because that's an impossibility.
Yeah. So it's hard to say, you know, without seeing the details of exactly how they're calculating that profitability, you know, whether,
I think it's a per unit. Like, it costs this much to make this car, and we make this much off this car versus like, you know, the entire system, the holistic everything.
Yeah,
I think they realize they're like, if we look at it that way, we're going to be afraid to do this, and we have to do it anyway. So let's look at it at a per car basis. I think that's probably how they're looking at it.
Speaking of profitability and EVs, let's talk about Tesla. The beginning of this week, Tesla reported their first quarter deliveries, and the numbers were not good. Their deliveries in Q1 were down 20% from their Q4 numbers, and 9% compared to Q1 of last year. And that's despite, you know, cutting prices significantly since then. You know, in the last week of the quarter, you know, Elon declared that, you know, every delivery had to get a test drive of FSD before the customer could drive off with the car, because apparently desperately trying to get people to pony up the $12,000 for FSD, because that's all pure profit for them, which is probably a sign that their Q1 numbers or financial numbers are going to be really bad in addition to the delivery numbers. But Reuters reported on Friday, or maybe it was Friday, that Tesla has scrapped their plans to build a $25,000 EV. And Elon, of course, you know, went and tweeted that, you know, that it's not, it's a lie. Reuters is lying. And then announced, we're going to show off our robo-taxi on August 8th.
What? It's such a, okay. So let's say they come out with a robo-taxi next year. Let's you know, everything's working out great, which, you know, it's been, this year is going to be the year of autonomous vehicles. This year, they're going to be a ton, you know, that's the last 5 years, 6 years. I don't even know anymore. 10 years. This is the year it's going to work out. Let's say magically a year or two, they have it working. You're still not going to make any profit off this. Robotaxis are not a profitable business, especially as you roll it out. You're talking like 8 to 10 years before you hit profitability. So if you look at it as a business case, you're like, well, this isn't, I mean, you can just ask Uber about this, to be honest. It doesn't really make financial sense. But if you look at it as I need shareholder value, you're like, oh, we're doing something. So the shareholder's like, oh, well, we should make sure we keep, you know, that means the profits or our share price is going to continue to go up. And so it would have been great to have a nice inexpensive vehicle from, and again, I feel, and then the next day or that day, Kia's like, we're going to have the EV too. They just announced all these new EVs, including a low cost one. You're just like, everyone just like, just, you know what? Just start mailing checks to Hyundai while you're at it.
Just give them some of your development budget. Save everybody the time.
Just everyone the time. Just give them the development budget. And, you know, they might mess it up. They might come there, you know, their EV2 might come out and might be horrible and whatever. But Tesla knew this was coming. They have BYD in China. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, increased competition from everywhere else in the world. I mean, they couldn't be the Kleenex of EVs forever. And you just kind of have to accept that you can't be, you know, you can't have 90%.
So many financial analysts were saying that Tesla was going to be selling 20 million cars a year by 2030.
But it's just 20 million cars. How many cars are sold every year?
About 85 million. See,
that's and one company. And now everyone's going to have EVs.
The most that any one company's ever sold is about 10 million a year. Volkswagen was doing 10 million a year for a few years leading up to the pandemic, and Toyota sells about the same. Toyota and VW do about 10 million a year.
Any company would be happy to make $10 million a year unless your company is propped up by an inflated stock price. That's all that comes down to it. Which, again, even the CEO is like, our stock price is too high.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's probably deleted that tweet, but, you know.
I don't think so. Elon never actually deletes any of his tweets.
That's true.
They're all there somewhere. You just got to find them.
He just assumes nobody's going to do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. It's only what's happening at the now.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I wish the Model 2, you know, an inexpensive EV. That's, I think for a lot of people, that's an important sort of barrier in order to get something. And, you know, one of the biggest, well, neck and neck biggest now at this point, EV maker in the world, them and BYD keep changing spots when they're like, yeah, we can't do it. We're not going to do it. We're going to make taxis.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the challenges, you know, with this $25,000 car was, you know, they've talked a lot about, you know, completely changing up the manufacturing process, you know, relying, you know, making it a very modular vehicle, you know, relying on just a few of these large scale castings that they use on some of the Model Ys. And while that takes a lot of cost out of their manufacturing process, it can really simplify the assembly line, you know, cause they just have a few big pieces to weld together instead of, you know, hundreds or thousands of pieces to put together. The problem with that is, yes, you may get a car that you can sell for a lower price at profit, but That car is also, because of that manufacturing process, also becomes essentially unrepairable.
Insurance.
Yeah. So your insurance prices are going to be way up on that thing, because if you get into a crash, it's basically going to be written off almost every time.
I'm curious. I want to see how BYD builds the Seagull / Dolphin. Because everyone's like, oh, they have the Seagull. It's $10,000 in China. I'm like, hold on, everybody. I'm like, first of all, they have a version of it. They're selling. They're going to be selling in Mexico. It's called the Dolphin, because the Seagull in the United States and Mexico is like a, you know, a rat bird. but it starts at $21,000. So it's like already, like, settle down, settle down. You're not getting a $10,000 car from China. But I'm curious, like, I haven't done any, I've done exactly zero research on how they're building those. But I'd love to go down to Mexico when BYD opens up that factory to see how they're building their vehicles.
Well, last year when I took a tour of CareSoft, which is a benchmarking company, and they've got a facility here in Livonia, Michigan, you know, they took us around. They showed us, you know, all these different vehicles that they've torn down. And one of the things we saw was they had two Volkswagen Tiguans that they tore down. One was a German-built Tiguan. That's the version that they sell in Europe and North America. And one was the Chinese market Tiguan that's built in China. And there were quite a few. And when, you know, it was down to just the body in white. You know, it's just showing us the body in white, not any of the other components. One of the things they said was the Chinese-built version only has about half as many spot welds on it.
Oof.
Which means that it's not going to have as much structural integrity. It was also
often about like one of those giant things in front of the car shop that the arms that pop around.
Not quite that bad, but yeah, you get the idea. And there was also a bunch of assorted brackets and braces that were not present on the Chinese version, because the crash tests that they have to do, like, are not as stringent as what we have in North America and Europe. And so that's one of the ways that they save a lot of cost on the vehicles that they sell in China. So to take any Chinese market vehicle and make it saleable in Europe or North America, they actually have to add a lot of cost back into it. So like you said, you know, I mean, that version in Mexico, you know, would it be able to pass North America or, you know, US crash test standards? I don't know, but you know, that's probably a bare minimum. It's probably still not enough to pass U.S. standards.
Yeah, it probably got to throw in a couple of grand more on that.
At least.
You know, there's going to be a BYD Dolphin / Seagull / whatever other sea creature at WCX for SAE.
Oh, is there?
Okay. So if you're in the Detroit area, you can get a free expo pass. It's the April 14th through 16th, WCX, and they will have one there. So I'm very excited. CareSoft's going to have it. So I'm very excited to go and look at it and stare at it and shake it. See if it falls over and whatnot. Yeah. So if you're in the area and you want to look at it, you know, if you're like looking for a job, or if you're an engineer, or if you're just like, you know, you're just a big car nerd, you should go and check it out. But they'll have one there. They'll have one there in the booth. You can't drive it or anything.
I have my media pass already. So.
All right. You can hang out, give each other high fives.
Yeah.
Get pizza.
Party.
All right. So if there was, you know, if you took a Tesla that's built today, what do you think are the chances that 110 years from now, that car will still be able to run?
110?
Yeah.
Will any car built today still be able to
run? 109 years. I'll give you
109 years. I think it'd be okay. I'm trying to think of electric motors from like 110 years ago, and I think you could get them to keep running.
I feel like it'd still run. It'd probably be
if you took care of it.
It would be like running it. It would be like a Model T. We're like, oh, ain't that cute? Like it would.
Ain't that cute? Yeah. I'm trying to think of really old electric. I mean, the problem is like a lot of the old electronics that I have, like they have a lot of analog bits in them, so it's not like circuit boards and stuff. So you have to think about corrosion. You know what? If it was in California, it'd be okay.
Yeah, I feel like it could run. I feel like most of them won't, but I feel like it could.
Like Detroit, Kansas, like places where there's a lot of salt on the road. Maybe not
run that long if you're really super diligent, I suppose. But
yeah, you open it up, you're cleaning every little circuit board,
tidying up on the interior, clean all the little bits and pieces, spend hours with a toothbrush.
replace all the capacitors. Exactly.
Replace all the little bits that need replacing. Like you'd replace things like belts on the car from 1921 or whatever. I'm trying to do math in my head. It's hard.
Math is hard.
Last year, our friends at TFL, Roman and Tommy, they bought a 1915 Model T. And they've been doing a series of videos with this thing. And I guess there was a big snowstorm in Colorado last week. And so they decided to try taking the Model T out to see how it drives in the snow. They've done a few others.
Oh, good grief. When am I going to find that? How was that adventure?
They didn't get very far. Let's put it that way.
Aww. What was everyone doing in the olden times when it snowed?
Staying inside.
They were just staying locking. Home.
Yeah, stay inside.
Just walking. Getting the horse back out.
Yeah. Yeah, the tires on the Model T were not able to get much in the way of grip. You know, they got it started, pulled it out of the shed, you know, back, Tommy back down, you know, just a very mild slope back out of the shed, and then could not move forward again.
And here we stay.
So there's old Roman, you know, trying to push this thing up the hill back in.
Why is Roman pushing it, not Tommy?
Because I don't think Roman knows how to drive this thing.
Weighs about 100 pounds less with Tommy. Tommy's a scrawny little thin thing. He's so tiny.
Yeah.
I love you, Tommy. I didn't mean that as an insult.
Why is Roman those? I drove the Simplex, a 1906 Simplex from Mercedes, and there's a lot going on when you're driving that car. Like, there's like 15 pedals, they're not, but there's a lot of pedals. There's all these, like,
everything is like beyond Roman's
scale. Eight to ten, like little vials that are on the, like, that are on the dashboard that, like, you have to keep an eye on. They're like, that's the gas, that's the oil, that's the this, that's the that, that's the, you know, that's the snake oil. There's like, oh, here's the brake. You got to pull this for the brake, and you got to do, and it's a binary, the clutch is either on or off. There's no,
oh, geez.
You're like, you have to double clutch, and then it's like, you just have to just get it right.
It feels like a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure.
And, you know, at least, you know, the Model T's got lots of ground clearance, so that wasn't a problem with the snow.
Oh, that's good.
But, you know, getting any grip.
Those weedy little tires they had on those cars. Woof.
Yeah. It was fun. So the link to that will be in the show notes, so you can check that out later. And then finally, we have a letter this week from Lawrence in California. And he says, hello, gang. I was driving near Glamis, California. Do you have any idea where that is, Robbie?
I'm looking up Glamis, California.
Okay.
I don't know where that is.
And saw a truck with the Mitsubishi symbol on the front. It looked brand new and was a flashy blue color, not camo. I was wondering if this is a new model coming stateside or maybe from Mexico, which is not very far away. I haven't seen any mention of a return from Mitsubishi. Truck looked to be a midsize with a chrome grill and a large emblem in the front. Let's answer that first. So, I mean, one possibility is, you know, because Mitsubishi is tied up with Nissan now, and, you know, like the new Outlander is based on the Rogue platform. It's possible they could do a rebadged version of the Frontier for Mitsubishi.
But it doesn't seem like they're doing that yet. Didn't they just announce that partnership?
The Frontier?
No, the partnership between Mitsubishi and...
No, that's been going for several years.
It's just a thing about developing a truck.
Because they've already done the new Outlander on the Rogue. So, but I think the more, particularly given that this had no camo on it, I think the more likely scenario is that what you saw was a Mitsubishi Triton. Which is a pickup truck that Mitsubishi sells in Asia. So they sell it.
Like, Mexico is literally right down the road from this place. Like, you can throw a rock in
Glamis.
From Glamis. It's right down the street.
Okay. So yeah, it was probably a Triton that you saw. I saw the Triton in Japan last fall at the Tokyo show. It's a good looking truck. But that's almost certainly what it was. And it's not uncommon for manufacturers to test, vehicles from overseas markets, you know, in the US that they have no plans no plans to ever sell here. But they'll bring them over to do testing with them, you know, in various environments. So that's most likely what it was. I mean, it's possible they could bring the Triton, but I given that it's not built here, I think it's more likely that if Mitsubishi does offer a truck here, it would be a rebadged version of the Frontier.
Yeah, it's likely from Mexico. That's my
yeah. And then my other question is about auto insurance. With all the data brokers and rate hikes, I was wondering about the options for coverage. I seem to remember the law allows a bond option. Just wondering how that works. So I presume you mean getting a bond, basically self-insuring.
Like I have a bunch of money here.
Yeah.
In case my car breaks.
And I think that, you know, because insurance regulations go state by state, it would probably depend on what state you're in, as far as what's required, you know, whether you would be allowed to do a bond, instead of buying insurance from an insurance company. It would be pretty costly, especially for the liability coverage. If you've got the resources, you know, you could certainly do it. I know, for example, automakers for, development and test vehicles, those are not insured. They self-insure, so they have a bond for that, but a car maker typically has a lot more money than an individual. It's doable, at least under certain scenarios. I don't know if either of you know anything about this.
I'm not going to pretend like I do because I know about insurance a little bit, but not anything about being able to have a bond instead of having insurance.
Yeah.
My word is my bond. That's all I got. which legally doesn't really work. That's what I found out. You can say that when they pull you over, like, can I see your insurance card? And I just say, my word is my bond. And they're like, no, buddy.
That won't cover you.
Yeah. You can certainly look into it, but my guess is that you're probably not going to have much luck with that, especially in California. I think you're probably going to have insurance through an actual insurance company.
Yeah.
And that is it for this week. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.